Honourable Member and everyone present. We are going to continue our work on clause by clause now today on the bill. And we in the process of going to the bill, we will then be able to highlight the issues that you feel will need relevance, because we need to discuss it with the court. That will need relevance to a letter that we then have to write to the speaker that we talked about in terms of the rules, so that we are able to see that we concur. Hopefully, if we work well with each other, we could be completed by 1 o'clock. But it will depend on the possible issues that we raise and the area that we're going to raise them in. Now, are we all certain that we have the relevant copies that you said that we should be having in front of us? Which hopefully I don't have to repeat. Did you get copies? You've got all your copies. Honorable Coleman? Ask one of the secretaries to answer this one. Do you have all your copies? What copies do you have? We don't want basically want you to have all the copies that you can carry with you that should be in front of you. Including the issues that we requested the learned writers to compile for us, which you wanted time for, to go through them, and as we get along in the relevant clause, if then there's an issue, if we still want to comply with the fact that you want to put it into the letter, that has to go to the speaker. Are we fine now with everyone? Right. We've got 10 points. Is there anything else we need to add other beyond the clause, what is reflected in terms of clause 1? Honorable Lorimer?
Thanks, Madam Chair. To start off with, I refer to page 3, line 7 of the original Act.
Clear now. It's either the bill or the Act.
Okay, this is the bill. Sorry.
It's the bill.
It's the original version
it's
of the bill.
It's the original bill from the Department from the Department.
Yeah. So in other words, it's the same numbering system as what is on the screen, but additional items which aren't raised there. So when I talk about page 3, line 7, line 8, I'm talking about the same numbering system, but from the bill, not from, from there.
Now, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill that you're talking of is called a D15 2013. Do we all have the same? We all have the same. Anybody doesn't have a copy? You don't have the bill. So you have an extra copy? For honorable members, we have movers. You also don't have one. Much do you have another one? Oh, there's a copy. There's one copy. Anybody else can sacrifice another? Let's check if I don't have an extra one. There's another copy. Now we all have copies. Wait for me. Having a meeting then.
Right, thanks, Madam Chair.
Just adding what is not here.
Yeah,
under clause 1.
Initially, yes. And that's my first point. It's just around the definition of beneficiation. Now, I must just say up front that this is part of the bill that we are going to vote against because we don't agree with beneficiation provisions. But apart from that, I mean, we may win such a vote, but we may not. If we do not,
point of order. Can I request that we don't become excited about votes or no votes? Yeah? Let's try and be positive on this one. We need to work here, Zishin. But let's try and be positive in the sense that we are working on clause by clause now. No conclusion has been made in terms of the processing of the bill. Okay?
I understand that. Sure.
Let's just be positive.
I have what I think is a cleaner definition of beneficiation. So instead of what you see in the bill in front of you, I'd like to suggest something that says simply this. Beneficiation means the transformation of a designated mineral to a higher value product which can either be used locally or exported. I have it written here, Madam Chair. Can I put this in front of you?
What we have in terms of the bill is that by the substitution for the definition of beneficiary following definition, beneficiation means the primary stage is for an A, right? The primary stage which includes any process of the winning, recovering, extracting, concentrating, refining, calcining, calcifying, crushing, screening, washing, reduction, smelting, or gasification thereof. B, a secondary stage which includes any action of converting a concentrate or mineral resource into?
Chair, the words in bold and starting with the brackets in line 7, that is deleted. So it's only the starting in bold, yeah, that's deleted. So it's only the underlined words from line 22.
Oh, so that's only what about the underlined words?
Yes. Okay. The word that's not underlined and underlined.
Now where should I be searching?
From the definition in line 7, beneficiation means the transformation.
Okay, the transformation, value addition or downstream beneficiation of a mineral and petroleum resource or a combination of minerals to a higher value product of a baseline to be determined by the minister we can either be consumed locally or exported. That's what it says currently, that we should accept. As the suggestion from Honorable Laurie Massey suggested, funeral form beneficiation means the transformation of a designated mineral to a higher value product which can either be used locally or exported. And it ends there. Honorable Member, Honorable Mahai.
The information that has been read now on the deal is a proper one. And I guess the Honourable Member's suggestion could have been misplaced for reading the gold area. But I suggest that we stay with the current provision in the bill.
Honourable Larima?
I'm quite clear about what I was doing there. And what I was doing was inserting, first of all, taking out the words in relation to any mineral resource, and then the words value additional downstream beneficiation, inserting the word designated before mineral, taking out the words mineral product to form a petroleum resource or combination of minerals, and then taking out the words over baseline to be determined by the minister, adding the word used before locally or exported, taking out the substituting used for consumed. So I mean, mine is, I think, simpler and less open to confusion.
Honourable Chair, in my view, what Honourable Lorimer is saying is not fundamentally opposed to what is written here. So the only thing is, to me, the only thing that he did is to remove the minister. Essentially what he says is what the definition says here. So I agree with Honourable Mahai that he stick with the definition that is on here. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also want to concur with my two colleagues here, because beneficiation will be converting a raw material, you transform it from a raw material to what was less able to eat and then becomes something else. So I want to agree also that limited it is.
My concern, Honorable Lorima, will be that the shortness of that definition could possibly exclude very petroleum and oil issues under the Act. Because if you just put it there, it means the transformation of a designated mineral. And we have accommodated issues of downstream beneficiation or downstream money. Could result in us excluding some important issues of concern that is related to our response. So can I say that you accept in this format? Agree.
I'm not going to die in the ditch with one, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Chair. In the A-list that we have on the screen, there's also two changes to the definition of beneficiation. On page 3, in line 23, we're omitting the words and petroleum resource, and then we're inserting four mineral products. So it's just important to note that change there as well, sir.
Thanks.
It's line 23. In the definition of beneficiation, to omit the word and petroleum resource, and to insert all mineral products.
Agreed.
Yes, I think what the law advisor just indicated us, I probably think this is true. And I think we need to go with these clauses a bit more with circumspection. Thank you.
Just want to be comfortable with the street law that I can explain what is embedded in mineral product. When you say, when you make these changes, just at least take us on board. because he's just saying that we omit petroleum resource with mineral products. And then what's the meaning? What does it say?
Thank you, Chair. The motivation for it, or the reasoning for it, was explained by the department, but it will no longer, beneficial depreciation will no longer be applicable with respect to petroleum resources, but it will only be minerals or mineral products. That's the effect of the change on doing that.
In any case, the stage of beneficiation comes, you know, you have to, in a way, trade, if I may put it that way. So it's the end product of what you have mined. Did you?
I think the mineral resource is still a resource that is still in the ground. But the mineral product, it will be even after perhaps the whole transaction of mining or the process, the downstream, after the first stage of the process on the mine, it's still a mineral. It still is called a mineral product. That's how we catch it.
Can I agree with the definition?
Is that under clause one of this act? That's what you're talking about. Because I have an issue with one of the definitions there.
Page 3.
It's on the ex mine value.
We're not yet there. Let the bottom. We're not yet there. We're just taking care of what has been included that is up and beyond the A-list. But we do it in order of the lines or the pages. So that if I say clause 1 and there's nothing included but you would like to add something, we add it, right, and discuss it and go through it, and then can start following the processes of the numbers that we have before.
Okay, so you're going to do each of these and make proposed amendments and so on. So I just want to make sure that these, for instance, my concern is that in paragraph 8, 9 of page 2 of the A-list, I have a issue which I would like to raise. I'm not sure. I don't understand exactly how you're
yes,
working.
Yes, I hear you. Yes, it has not got to have any other issue from point 1 to point 8. Can we take care of point 9? We are on point 9, Honourable Schmidt. On page 2, yes. Remember that we are doing everything under clause 1, right? Page 2, point 9.
The definition of designated minerals. Now, as it stands, I think this is very wide because it says, it means such minerals which contribute to local beneficial programs aligned with national development imperatives. Now, I think that's a very imprecise type of language. What are national development imperatives? Who sets them? And this potentially is going to include every single mineral which is used to depreciate in any way in the country. What I would like to suggest instead is something far more precise, is that a designated mineral is something that has to be designated by the minister. So everybody is clear which minerals have been designated. So my suggested change there is to take out the word constitutes input into local beneficiation programs in line with national development imperatives and substitute instead means such minerals which are declared as such by the minister in a notice in the Gazette in accordance with section 26. Again, I'll have it written if you'd like to have a comment.
I suggest that you read to us the proposed definition.
Okay. The definition we have on page 27 you have, right? The proposed definition says, suggested final form, designated minerals should read as such, means such minerals which are declared as such by the minister in a notice in the Gazette in accordance with Section 26. And ours on page 2 says, designated minerals means such minerals which constitute input into local beneficiation programs in line with national development imperatives. Honorable Mark.
So the difficulty is to do with our national development imperatives. That's very crucial. This is broad enough as whom from time to time to determine based on the balance of evidence. So it allows room for the minister to unleash an ongoing transformation agenda. So I do have this formulation. This one, the one that has national development imperatives, designated mineral means, minerals which constitute input into local beneficiation program in line with national development imperatives. We propose that it stays.
Another input?
Honourable Chair, if I can try and explain further, as my honourable friend, it's about trying to get certainty and clarity in this law. And one of the criticisms has been that there's too much room for uncertainty. Now, if you say to me national development imperatives, I don't know what those are. And I don't think anybody in this room can tell us what national development imperatives are. The point being is it's completely open to interpretation by the minister, which may change from month to month, and that does not bring certainty, which is what we're trying to achieve.
What are national development imperatives? When we talk of national development imperatives, what are we talking about?
We've clarified the national development imperatives in section 26, where the minister must take into account national development imperatives such as macroeconomic stability, energy security, industrialization, food security, and infrastructure development. So those are the imperatives that we want to capture in respect of that. But initially, the introduced version had a provision where, which indicated that the minister will do so by noting the Gazette. So, but it's up to the committee to decide whether to include that as such. But
what I'm trying to get it in the explanation of the national development imperative is the standard sort of formulation of what is needed out of national development. The national development imperative is a waiver statement that can change on anything. It's direct to indicate what is meant by national development imperatives elsewhere. And then in the main is in section 26, which basically is what is being said here in accordance with section 26. It's one and the same, basically, if you look at it.
Yeah, well, actually, my argument would be those are still, you've given us some categories, but those are still very imprecise because we don't really know what that means, which is why my suggestion is that the minister actually declare the minerals in the notice specifically, because national development imperatives, that's a pretty wide catch of food security. What does that mean? How does that affect mining? It still seems very, very wide open to me, and I would prefer the insertion of that clause that says she has to specifically say.
Honourable Chair, like you, I was actually awaiting the indication for from the state law advisors as to what is it that we speak about when we speak about national development imperatives, which I think was the essence of the input made earlier on by an honourable man. But now that it has been clarified, I think we don't have to dwell into getting the definition of what food security means, what energy saving means, what this means, and so forth. I think the definition is clear. And to me, the definition of designated minerals suffices as it is in the document. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I mean, everything that Honorable Lord Mayor raised has been covered.
Honorable Chair?
Madam Chair, the phrase, it's basically a phrase, National Development Imperative. One would expect to see somewhere a definition to say a National Development Imperative means those imperatives as described in the National Development Plan, or something to that effect. Because it is a very wide, as you say, it's a very funny statement. It may be that it means refers to something else, but I can't. It needs to be defined as such.
Can I ask us, do we have a definition on national development imperatives? We don't have a definition. Because I think national development are standards, if I may say so, in terms of what it entails when we talk of national development imperatives, which are part of a requirement of the national development plan. Do you want to say something, please?
Yes, Chief. I think she is correct it will be difficult to have a list as to what national development imperatives are. And in order to address that, the minister will designate, because national development imperatives would probably, and in such a way, she could try to highlight those imperatives, what they are, and what the minister should consider as a priority from a national policy perspective. But she, if I may, propose that we retain the words that we have currently, and we just add the words that the minister, as designated by, I just want to link it to the with the words that we have currently introduced, or that designated minerals means such which means such minerals which constitute inputs into local penetration programs in line with national development imperatives as declared by the minister by noticing the date. So to also link that. So we have what we currently retain what we have, because the minister will do that by noticing the gazette. Chair.
Honorable Chair, I was going to a proposal for when I read my writing down. Because we want to say national development imperatives as outlined in the national development plan, or you can say as may be determined by the minister.
The Gazette? Did you say something about the Gazette? We say it means such minerals which constitute inputs into, sorry? I didn't get that.
No, we were saying the formulation as put forward.
Can you repeat that then?
It comes for
a complete formulation.
On page 2, where we retain what you have there, means such minerals which constitute into local beneficiation programs in line with national development imperatives as declared by the minister in as declared by the minister in the gazette.
Accepted. As may be or as declared.
As declared. Yeah.
So we accept it as such. Can we pass that one? Point 7? Point 9, Honorable Mufay?
Point 9, Honorable Chair, I was saying we delete the X mine value to the replacing of mine gate price. But then what we do is we remove the entire 9. Because already it has been dealt with on page 3. The mine gate value definition is dealt with on page 3. So we remove the entire mine. We deal with it on page 3.
Okay. Honourable Schmidt, you said there's something on point 9.
Yes, I was trying to distinguish before that I saw the screen at the moment with the lines crossing out that particular section. It's not crossed out on our copy of the document. So I was trying to find out what the difference is between the X mine value and the mine's great price on the next page.
Thank you, Chair.
It is just an omission, and we only did it yesterday after the meeting. So, but it's the same document. That's the only structure that we have on this document. It's dealt with in terms of a new definition of mine gate price, but we'll probably get to that when the Chair speaks to that particular page. Thank you.
So all point 9 is excluded now. We agree? Right? Anything else under plot 1 on page 9, on page 2?
Madam Chair, point 10.
Point 10?
Once again, in the difficult position, the actual definition there, I believe should not be in this bill at all. So I think it should be struck out. It also raises another issue, and that is that there was some discussion before about the possibility of separating oil and gas from minerals. So I take it that because the stuff is still in here, that that decision has not been taken. But the intention is to include oil and gas in this bill.
Now remember the discussions we had initially. It was based on the fact that we took note of what has been said in terms of the public hearing. But we were deliberating, remember, didn't come to any conclusion. Now that we're going to cross by cross, this has come to a conclusion for us to take it on to the next phase to say this is the bill that we're expecting. So no conclusion has been made. But in the process of us having had discussions of us separating the two bills, remember I mentioned that it's a possibility. But based on the time frame we're faced with, it won't be realistic for us to say we'll be able to manage this. And us separating it now, when do we do the research we're concerned to attest to viability of the two being separated at this point in time? And the fact that the minerals and the petroleum as an X exist, we need to decide as to in what format to repass this bill presently. But it doesn't mean that we cannot make changes, which is what we are busy with presently, in what we have to effect as changes to the original Act.
May I make a proposal then, Madam Chair? It sounds like the right time to do it, to propose that given the fact that the oil and gas industry is so new, and given that it's an incredibly complex area, and that it's my belief that this it sits rather uncomfortably in this bill. But what we could do is we could send this bill forward with all the mining parts changed as we agree. Where it affects petroleum, i.e. oil and gas, we actually ignore all of this that have been, those parts that have been proposed, and instead just leave it as it is in the current Act. In other words, we leave it unchanged. So we have a legal framework in place in the current Act. Instead of changing that legal framework when we deal with this bill, we actually just leave all the provisions regarding oil and gas in place, so the old framework stays in place. That would allow the DMR, as presumably instructed, to then draft separate, more appropriate, better without legislation, they'll have more time dealing with oil and gas and introduce that perhaps later in the year. My concern is that what we're going to do is that we've got an oil and gas set of rules in place at the moment. In this bill we're going to change it for rules which I don't think are quite right. So let's rather leave the old rules in place for oil and gas. The department can then propose something later in the year which is more appropriate, and at that time separate them out.
How do you intend then fixing the fact that we all agree to the water environmental changes we are making in the firm, and those have already been passed under the water and environmental committees, remember? So it wouldn't be fair to say that we can't make any other changes.
No, sure. But, you know, then, all I'm saying is that while we go through and we make these changes, when we come to a section that deals with free carry interest, we say, well, that's not necessary because it deals with oil and gas.
So let's actually take that out of it. In other words, any time we come across oil and gas in the bill, we just take it out. So the old set of rules applies, and that can be changed at a later date. Because we risk having one set change for another, and if the department decides it does want a new act, we may have a third set of rules, which the industry is faced with in the next year or so, which seems to be very unsatisfactory. And I think this is the most elegant way of doing it. We go to service, it's in place, we leave it, and to do this, every time in a spill we come across something to deal with changes, deals with changes to the oil and gas rules, we just take it out.
Honourable Chair, initially I was tempted to agree with the Honourable Member. But as and when it goes on with this argument, it started not making sense to me. So I want you to suggest that you don't suggest that let's not defy a particular thing in the Act on the basis of us being new entrants into a particular area. Actually, that's the reason why we should define it. Unless if there's any other contrary argument that would suggest to us that we should not define free trade interest in the Act as it is, then I think we should leave it as it is in the Act. But the other thing, Honourable Chair, is that you see, as and when we make our inputs, it will be correct to check with your state law advisors as to why necessarily would it be correct to have a particular definition in the Act. But in our own view, it is only correct to define this, especially for the reasons that have been given by the Honourable Member. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Can I say that let us... Oh, sorry, Honourable Chair,
well, thank you. I support the view expressed by Mr. Mwiteng that we do not support a peaceful approach, that we deal comprehensively with this piece of legislation, no separation of oil and gas. We can't afford to be spectators on a very important subject that requires a very clear framework in which to move. So we do not support the separation.
Assuming, Honourable Chair, that we are done with the part that we have just been discussing, I want to go to 30. The main gate.
Okay. Are you concentrating on 20?
No, no, I want to go to 30 now.
Can we wait? Because I think there were more hands up. I thought you were still on the same point. Honourable
Smith,
are there any
other
relation to point 10, or are we moving on?
No, I'm going to say, I just wanted to establish the notion of keeping the amendments in the bill, insofar as oil and gas is concerned. Do you foresee the possibility of, in the future, this bill being split? Because it seemingly, I get the impression that some people are saying it might be split, it may not be split. So, do I understand correctly that some of my colleagues also talking in the Korea under the impression that the free tariff interest, insofar as it has an impact on oil and gas only, is a temporary measure until if the bill is split, or am I saying incorrectly?
Just remember this, when you talk of the X, going back to the X, you're not only talking about minerals, you're talking about minerals and petroleum, right? It's an X that bears the existence. So any changes that we put in, which is in this case in the form of the bill, which we are dealing with presently, doesn't necessarily mean it could have an effect on what could happen to the future of it. And one of the issues is the fact that we've come up with the reasons to say possibly split the two. But because this committee cannot justify the viability of the split due to the fact that, for a fact, protests are coming to an end when we start doing our proper research work. Right? And the fact that we cannot just determine something and decide on it and say we take it without having the facts straight. The scientific research work having been done. Right? It also doesn't mean that because now we have this dilemma of here, this two law model, we now have to subtract things out of this, what has been there in the act. If the action is improving or areas of concern to look into, for the country to operate and to continue its operations, I mean, what's wrong with making the changes that we need to make? And if, as we go along, we feel that that necessity of that precarious issue must remain, we can still decide that at the end of the course by course to say, we finally agree that this must stay or this must go. What I'm trying to stop is the thinking that Honorable Norima, for example, suggested that we must exclude anything that says oil and gas, if I understand you correctly. But now how do we run the country in terms of law and compliance in terms of the Minerals and Petroleum Act to ensure that nothing goes amiss in processes of development of the industry, because the progress being made, is, for example, with shale gas, there's already issues that are coming up in terms of shale gas and lawyers be implemented or applied to those areas of work.
If I can try and explain where I'm coming from, Madam Chair. There is already, in the current Act, as it is, a set of provisions in place that govern oil and gas. So if we don't change anything in this bill, the current law is just going to remain. So it's not as if there's going to be no rules at all. It just means the current rules will continue.
Honourable Sir.
Chairperson, on a point of order, you are taking us back now. What we have already agreed on. I think Honourable Member Smith was just trying to understand whether this bill is going to be separated at some point. And the answer is no, as you have given. Thank you.
Honourable
Wuteng
and Honourable
Lorimer,
I'm going to close this issue now.
Honourable Chair, I want to suggest that we close this issue. Because we cannot really anticipate what is going to happen to this act in future. Let's deal with it now, because we are informed by circumstances as they prevail now. We cannot predetermine what will be the circumstances in the future. So the question is whether the bill will be separated in future or cannot be answered in this meeting. At the time when circumstances push us out and allow, we will do that. We hope we probably may be agreeing with Honorable Smith tomorrow. Who knows? But for now, we are having this as a thing that informs us. And you are saying, let's stick to what prevails and not predict the future. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Madam Chair, then, just a process question. Are we going to come back and go through these clauses one by one and say whether we agree or don't agree on them? I just want to know whether I need to. Is that what's going to happen?
Yes, that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
At the end of us, everyone, to cross by cross. If needs be, we'll vote on the issues.
Good, thank you.
So can we bank this one? This coin? Can you have a way of banking? Do you know how to bank what? No, what I mean is we're going to go through everything. And when we've got disagreement, for us not to delay the process, we're going to come back and just deal with both issues only. And then decide our way forward from there. Or whether we include it or don't include it. But for now, stay with the dispute on point 10.
Just, on that particular point, this is the definition of free carried interest. And it's dealt with further on in the main provisions of the bill under the new section 86A. So it's important to have this definition because we have substantive provision dealing with safeguard suppression. And so I just want to say that we just found the word. Thank you, Chair.
Except that we leave it for now. We put it aside for at the end of May. Okay.
With
finding or the procedure. That's one big deal of the procedure, because...
No, all we are saying is for us not to delay the process. Where we there seems to be a dispute on an issue. Well, if we need to vote on it, we'll vote on it. But at the end of all those having we push it to one thing. We are passing it. Apparently it's the correct way.
No.
Honorable Mepin, you want to continue? You want to follow up?
No, whether you are taking anything in it, to me, deposit the trap, please, sir. We are leaving this issue, we are going to other issues, we still come back to all of them. That's a process. That's a process issue. Honorable Chair, the... Well...
I take it Honorable Mwai is going.
No, Honorable Mwai is fine.
Are you covered?
Yeah, I don't know you think, Chair, because I just wanted to be on the process, because sufficiently we have clarity, we raise the rationale behind an amendment, and then we are able to see areas of disagreement.
Yes.
By the time we come back on the process, it will be a process of clause by clause voting on the law.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thanks.
We're saying the same thing in different words. Okay. Right. Now can you move to page 3?
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. Can you move to page 3?
I'm not sure. No, I wanted to remind Honorable Mwai that Honorable Lorimer has already indicated the voting and all those things when he started. So he must raise himself for the last. He shouldn't worry about anything. He must just prepare himself to vote. Number 13 on page 3, Honorable Chair. We agreed earlier on that we delete the definition of S-man value on page 2, and it is replaced by mandate price on page 3. But I want to further suggest, Honorable Chair, that on the definition of mandate price, we must omit the words fair value. Right, we must omit the words fair value and to redraft the definition. I think we just remove fair value and the definition remains as is after the removal of fair value, meaning that the definition will be thus: mandate price means the price in brackets excluding that, close bracket, of the mineral or mineral product at the time of the mineral or mineral product leave the area of the mine, and excludes transport and delivery charges from the mine back to the local beneficiator. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable
Chair, I still have an issue with number 11, on page 2. I have to ask a question.
Oh, sorry. You're just saying that's point 13. Page 2?
Number 11, it says on page 4 and 941, to admit South African citizens is a substitute of a person.
Page?
This is page 2. Number 11, point 11.
Yeah. I just want to look at the problem. I think that goes to the they're defining a historically disadvantaged person. Am I correct? Or South African? What did you say the last time? We did discuss this the last time. In terms of, I think it was about the definition of HDSA.
No, I also thought I must remind you, Honorable Chair, when we were discussing this, this actually is a suggestion that was put forward by Honorable Smith. The argument that he presented was that when you speak about South African citizens, you are not accommodating the juristic process or your companies and so forth. Rather, instead of having South African citizens, substitute it to the person so that in your definition then it will include a juristic person. That was the argument that was put by Honorable Smith. Thank you, Honorable. That's what I mean.
Honorable Smith is feeling very happy.
I honestly can't recall it, it's been a year, but I remember a discussion about juristic persons, but I can't recall that it had to relate to this particular. Because the first thing I asked myself was, what is the definition of in the relevant act of sort of disadvantaged South Africans? Because HDU said, there's another act dealing with it. And I think maybe we should check up and see if we're not redefining that particular definition of sort of disadvantaged South Africans with something concrete to that act.
If you ever ask me whether you call it a South African citizen, or whether you call it a person, the bottom line is it's a term that was developed within the Republic of South Africa because of a previous dispensation, and in making sure they take care of previously historically disadvantaged people to be able to participate. Right? Now, to me, to say HDMA, SA is already there, which tells you that it will be a citizen of South Africa. S is already there in the HDSA, right? Now, whether you say a person or you say a South African citizen, the bottom line is accommodative of somebody in the Republic of South Africa who has previously disadvantaged.
If you think about it in that way, the problem is that it's, and that's why I find myself at odds with whatever we say, because a person then refers to an individual who was previously disadvantaged under the previous regime. So,
a category of them.
And there's a category of them.
Yes.
But that's what I'm trying to determine. Is the reference to a person, which widens it within this context, then a correct reference to a person and not going to be a South African citizen?
Madam Chair, if I can elaborate.
We're not in Canada.
Not at all. I honestly can't remember what Honorable Schmidt said before, so I may be arguing against him. Maybe we can just get it clear, because as I read it now, if you put a person instead of a South African citizen, it means that a person who would have been disadvantaged under the previous regime, a person from Ghana, for example, or from Jamaica, is now advantaged by this law. Surely it should simply be South Africans who were in a category who were disadvantaged before, because they actually suffered the disadvantage. Somebody comes here from Congo, or from Jamaica, or from India, would have been disadvantaged before under the previous regime, but actually they weren't, because they weren't South Africans. So surely we should put back South Africans.
The fact remains that in terms of laws in the country, we had a situation where we were mixed. We had our, for example, if I may make an example, our Indian counterparts, where you found that they want to participate in events or business or whatever you want to call it within the country, right? Now, before they could even get the business, the bottom line is that you have to make an application to go through certain processes to qualify to be in that business or to be recognized in that category of previously disadvantaged people or even a citizen of South Africa, okay? And before you pass those processes, you couldn't really say, let's take the mine workers as an example. Let's take a person who's working in the mine from Ghana or whatever other country, right? There were conditions applied to those people in terms of what they benefit and don't benefit out of the Republic of South Africa, right? Now, if in the process they decide to become citizens within the country, they make the relevant application and their citizenship is accepted, this guy from Ghana does fall under the category of previously disadvantaged, right? He's followed processes, he qualifies for rentals, he's also somebody who qualifies to benefit out of whatever needs to be benefited in terms of being an HDFA. Relevant processes, that is why I keep on saying that we might have suffered in South Africa under the previous dispensation, but two processes are followed even by those from outside the country who would then be categorized into being HDFA. Honorable Modeng, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Sonto, Honorable Marima.
Honorable Chair, whichever way we play it, a loving thought of what Honorable Smith, Honorable Lorimer and you are saying is that South African citizens should remain as it is, we should not change it. That is the long and short of what you are saying. So I agree with all of you that it should remain as South African citizen and not substitute South African citizen with the way that pressure. And thanks for making it clearer to all of us. Honorable Smith, Honorable Lorimer and the Chair.
Thank you, my Chairperson. Go ahead, Honorable Sojo. My
Co-Chairperson. Chairperson, whilst I was not going to question the whistle of replacing South African citizens by a person, I was just baffled that it is fair to be originating from Honorable Mother Smith. Now he is contradicted by Honorable Member Lorimer. I think when we talk about the SDSA, we understand the definition of that acronym. And that acronym is coined to accommodate those people the previous dispensation never accommodated in life. Whether it is what to say it's a South African citizen is correct, because whether he comes from England or America, bearing a color that was not needed then, that person had to suffer. So I think let us live with South African citizens as defined in the what's name in the original act, and remove persons as was such as this. Thank you.
Honorable Schmidt, and I'm going to close this matter after Honorable Lorimer. Honorable Chino. Okay.
I don't think there's any contradiction. I think the only thing we're trying to establish is that whether it is a domestic person or a natural person, whether it is a South African citizen or a citizen from another country, as long as it's in agreement with the act, the initial act in which it was determined what a historically disadvantaged African definition thereof. There's not a contradiction with that principle as where it is determined. That's the point we're trying to make. There's no contradiction as such. And maybe Lord Vise would be able to say it's found in this act and this is what it is described as. That's a contradiction.
Honorable
Arima?
Not for the same, Madam Chair.
Honorable Cinto?
Just to conclude, Chairperson, we're saying we agree that we retain the word South African. No, not the person, but South African citizens. We retain that.
I'm closing the message. We retain it, there is. I'm closing it. We retain it. We don't have to discuss it more. Right. So we are done with page 2 now. Are you ready? Right, now we were on point 13. Honorable Murphy, it is again.
He is not here, but he can talk for
you. Okay.
I think I was online before. There's no way back you.
I think you are about to.
I was about to. Yes.
Then it's Honorable Sonto.
Madam Chair, the. I agree with Mr. Moapi is not here now, which is very strange, but what I wanted to indicate was that modern gate price means it said a fair value price. Now, I agree that the word fair value should be removed, because nowhere in the Act is fair value price determined. But elsewhere in the Act, more particularly with regards to Section 86A, and were determined the additional 30% shareholding which a district government can obtain in a certain operation. That is against fair market value. So, and when you use a certain terminology in the Act, and you then use the word, for instance, which is now been removed, or hopefully can be removed, fair value, it denotes something different than fair market value. So, A, there was a contradiction between the two terms, and the one term not being described or circumscribed, whilst fair market value is quite a well-known general legal term. My view would be, or my suggestion would be, is to remove fair value price and replace it with free market value, because that is exactly what we speak of when we refer to mine gate prices, and to ensure continuity throughout the board and understand exactly what we're talking about.
This is how nice it is when you're not 3-on-17. It makes work so much easier. Why don't you just go ahead like this?
Yes, I think it's quite easy flowing. It's a question that Honorable Member Smith agrees that fair value should be removed. But what I do not understand is fair value price should be removed and be replaced by free market price. I think the intention of removing the value there was driven by not understanding what it means, I said. Now, in the absence of that, therefore, we talked about a price instead of fair value, because we do not know which goes is going to come and determine a fair value price. If it's a price, therefore, it's a price that will be determined by negotiations of the time, influenced by circumstances prevailing at that particular time. That is why we remove fair value and put a price, because it will be at a price. That is why you are removing that value. Free market value, I don't want to talk about that because I've not seen the formulation that takes us to a free market value. We'll talk, we'll cross the bridge on countries. Represent on Marmelanda. Thank you very much. I think unless Honorable Member Smith would agree that we remove all the fair value, we retain price, because this transaction is going to come at a price. So we retain price, as I have already explained.
Just discussing
this
with Ayanda. But anyway,
Honourable Schmidt. Yeah, Ayanda's view is better. can I just... you're quite right. Fair value price is a foreign terminology. It's a foreign, but it's not really a well-known concept. Free market value is, and we all understand, fair market value. Those three characteristics that I just want to say. Fair market value. And it's a well-known legal concept, and if everyone understands exactly what it means, and therefore, in order to ensure, and that's the point I think is being made, to ensure continuity in the board, in the Act. Eventually, if one uses the same terminology when describing the notion of, in this instance, effect mine gate price. So it is using a terminology well-known, replacing it by something, or replacing something which is not well-known knowledge, and not described by the Act.
Do you want to make an input on this?
Cheers, thanks. The reformation of the term that we use must be consistent in how we use it, basically. And then, of course, from the department's perspective, it should reflect the intention to be achieved in the manner that you use it. So, whatever term we use, the committee must just make sure that it's the intended value to be incorporated, And then we have to be consistent in how to apply the main provisions where it's used in the bill. Thank you.
But remember this, then otherwise we accept, what did you say, in the minister? Mandate price means?
Fair market value.
You know, I always have a problem, I even said it the last time, I think, of when you make a definition, you repeat a word. Now look at the word mine gate price, and go and repeat means the price. Honorable Kuller, you try to answer?
Maybe just to use the definition of the mine gate price. It means the price of excluding that of the mineral product at the time that the mineral or mineral product leaves the area of the mine, and excludes charge such as transport and delivery from the mine area to the local benefits. In fact, the increase of the value defeats the object of the beneficiation section. Okay.
Remember, can I request that you repeat yourself? I didn't get this quite right.
I was thinking about the main gate price.
The main gate price, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Means the price excluding that of the mineral or mineral products at the time that the mineral or mineral products leave the area of the mine. And excludes charges such as transport and delivery from the mine area to the local community.
Chairperson, I think the essence of the sentence that does not bring about the fear that you have, fear of repetition. The value price is the price. That's what the sentence is saying. Yeah. And all the other explanation that follows that. We are just removing fair value because of the dubious nature that fair value is bringing about in the context of the intention thing.
I just give another possible explanation. In the intended clause, section 36A, 3.1, Roman 1, the notion of a fair market value is used there as well. It is used for additional 30% shareholding by government. So it's not a principle simply unknown to the book. It is just that the fair value was an unknown concept to be replaced by the value, free market value, fair market value. And that's hence the determination of the proposal that you replaced by those words.
I do understand the point that Mr. Rima is raising. Fair market value is a principle that is well understood, yes, I agree. But I think the context is important. Under which this
you mean Honorable Smith?
Honorable Smith, yeah, my apology, please. No reason, really. My apology, Honorable Smith.
You look like a teacher.
No. I don't subscribe to a slow thought. I apologize for the mistake. I apologize. The context is important. And I think if we listen to what the state advisor says, that it should not defeat the proposed formulation if it doesn't defeat the proposed or what the act is intended for. I propose that we leave with it. I don't want us to enter into the debate of market or what. So the context is important. As well, market can be driven by speculation and so forth. There are a number of kinds of reasons, but it's fine the way in which it is proposed here, maybe.
Yeah, see, and just to clarify further, mind read price is used in terms of the provisions of section 26, clause 21. So you must just bear that in mind. It's not,
mind read price is used in terms of the clause relating to beneficiation, not 86, which deals with state participation. So it only relates to beneficiation.
Right, and we concluded that mine gate price means the price excluding rest of the mineral or mineral product at the time the mineral or mineral product leaves the area of the mine and excludes transport and delivery charges from the mine area to the local beneficiator. Next point on page 3. Okay, move over. Page 4. Anything on page 4? Another one, maybe? Oh, I think on page 4. No. Well, it's saying something. Oh, okay. Page 4, yeah.
No.
Is there something else on page 3 that you just want to say? Do you accept that it's on page 3, is it? Now on page 4?
Madam Chair, page 4, production sharing agreement. It seems to be a tautologist. The definition seems to be, the word seems to explain the definition of the definition.
Tautonic. Did you want to be tautonic?
Something to that effect, but the word explaining.
We need the Englishman now to give us a dictionary definition here.
Theoretic or pathologist or something, but the word using to explain the word production sharing agreement means an agreement between the state and the petroleum company on how the extract resource will be shared between the state and the petroleum company. That's the best way to describe it.
Page 4 at the top.
So I think it's the word describing it.
Page 4. Well, can you give Mama Tibele a welcome, a copy? Next
year,
the
lawyer.
What's the charge now again?
Is
it supposed to be
dictionary definition here, Chair.
I wouldn't mind hearing it.
Okay, the saying of the same thing twice over in different words.
Oh!
I see.
Yeah, that's it. Tautology. No, man, rhetoric is something else. You need some humor sometimes. Okay.
If I may take the question back to the definition of mine gate price,
yes.
The department just brought down my attention that this definition should also relate to the processing site. So in the third line of the definition, after the words the mine, we should also include or processing site.
Now let's listen to each other again.
Oh, thank you, sir.
This is our platform now. The department has several times of bringing in issues. Now we are putting us in the competition here. But let's hear the members. Honorable Mufeng, Honorable Orima.
I think it makes sense, Honorable Chair.
Can you include it?
Yes.
Can you explain why it needs to be there? I'm not quite clear.
Okay. We'll give you honorary membership of the member. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. There are certain instances where you find that you can mine a product on one side and then 50 meters away you put your cotton to the side. So you need to accommodate for that situation. But if you can mine it, it's still raw, it's in the form of an op. But the mine site is there and the 2 kilometers are when you put that the processing plant. But that is where actually we have to ensure that we take up the resources. So this definition is going to be processing plant when they change the
process. And then it should lead us, the mineral or mineral product leaves the area of the mine
or processing site.
Another Schmidt?
would it make sense to say the product is the area of the mine or mine processing site? Because processing site seems to indicate beneficiation on its own. I mean, it seems to indicate beneficiation. So
the mine processing site.
In other words, that processing site which is related to the mining operation is not a processing site for beneficiation further down the line.
Okay, accepted. Honorable Sanka?
Person, you are not processing the mine, you are processing the mineral. Why would it be a mine processing site instead of it being a mineral process site? You are not processing the mine there, in that site. You are processing the mineral.
If I may, Madam Chair, this belongs to the mine. It doesn't mean processing the mine. It means
mine gate price.
It's a mineral. It's not
mine. Mine gate price. Processing price. Mine processing. I want you to depart from this. Listen to me. Okay, mineral product. Listen. If mine gate price means the price of the mineral or mineral product at the time that the mineral or mineral product leaves the area of the mine or the mine processing site. No, it's talking about leaving an area, a particular jurisdiction area, if that mine. I didn't pass word the English.
My question. Honorable Gwepeng, can you help? You know, Honorable Chair, I'm sitting here asking myself what difference does it make. Whether you call it a mine processing site or mine or processing site, as long as you understand that the processing site is related to the mine, it doesn't matter.
Let's use the
question
to move on. What's the argument? And don't take us right now, you must work ahead of us. Page 4. We were still under production sharing agreement. I think something was said about the production sharing agreement. Who was on the floor? Honorable Smith?
With apology, sir. So, my question was whether that was just self-referral. Thank you. If it wasn't a better way of describing production sharing agreement.
A definition, I need to describe the definition, the description of that bold word. There's no better way of putting it, and I think that's exactly what I attempted to do. I mean, leave it as it is. I don't think it's a better way. Unless it's got a suggestion on the revision. Nothing. Anything else on page 4? Page 5? Anything for addition? Cross 2? Cross 3? Cross 5? Honorable Lorimer? Cross 5?
Sorry, Madam Chair, just before you move on, just give them a minute to move the clause to get together on clause 5. That's the one where they remove the clause and substitute the clause. All right.
Cross 5 rejected. Oh, the new clause. Okay, I'm missing it now. That the following be a new clause, amendment of section 9, Act 28 of 2002, as amended by section 6 of Act 49 of 2008. The following section is thereby substituted for section 9 of the principal act. Page 6. 691.
If a regional manager receives more than one application for process, that's all out. Honorable Arame, are we still with you?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll just go through this. It's quite a complicated procedure and it has changed. I just need a minute to try to just have to make sure that I know myself how it's supposed to work. I don't know whether it would be right to ask somebody for the department to take us through the process, just by way of explanation.
Gigi? We are on page 6, main one. Can I give you a minute? A second?
Yes.
Honorable Chair?
I hate to do this, but I seem to be picking up that we're slipping up somewhere. On page 4, paragraph 19, you will recall that with regards to the words national development imperatives, we qualified as some. And you will see in page paragraph 19, it says security supply and orderly supply of designated minerals and mineral products, local beneficiaries in order to support the national development imperatives. What I'm saying is, if you want to amend it or don't want to amend it, if so, it's why the same discussion applies to this and the previous discussion.
I think I need to ask again, do we have a definition of national development imperatives? Maybe that's what we should include.
I think what I've said previously on this particular issue is that we don't want to, in the legislation, have a definition of national development imperatives because it has the effect of limiting the application of it. Because national development imperatives depend on the priorities set by government or department in respect of this particular area. So it's best to keep it as we have it currently in the bill. And how we use it in
so the word national development imperative will be dependent on what would have been formulated at the time in terms of objectives of the department or the government.
Yeah.
The reason why I raised it, we qualified it earlier by that to be determined by the minister in the Gazette. That's how we qualify national development imperatives, and I would seem to be of the view that include thereof would also assist in determining what the national development imperatives are, because then it's gazetted by the minister, like we did in the previous.
Another more thing?
No, I think it's right. Because what we said earlier was, unless if what you are referring to here now is different from what you were referring to earlier on. But because you're not saying define national development imperatives, you cannot do that, right? In line with the argument that is being presented, that it could be from time to time. It may change from time to time, depending on circumstances that prevail on the ground. But you may want to say, in order to accommodate the changing environment, to say that immediately after national development imperatives, just put that part that says as determined by the minister as such, as determined by the minister. I think that is what we want to say. It won't change anything in what we are saying. I think that is what Honorable Smith wants to be. What he's actually saying is why later on after national development imperatives, after we have discussed it, we put as determined by the minister, and why are we not putting it here now?
Right.
Chair, I would really propose that the state law advisor gives an opinion on this matter. Because also it will be very clumsy in the law to always run after gazette and gazette. That's going to be the crafting of the legislation. We also should bear in mind that there is a process of regulations that will come, and a process of we need to draw this distinction. I really would suggest, because it doesn't read well, honestly, because it's like gazette, it's a closing, it's an instrument on law. We should not fear national development imperatives. That will be unapologetic. as lawmakers, national development imperative is crucial to the agenda for fundamental social transformation. But the law we are doing is not for the sake of it. It's because we are transforming the mining landscape. So it's unapologetic. So I really would want to ask the legal advice, because it's also technical consideration in the legislation, which we really need to bear in mind. Thanks.
Do you want to say something, sir?
Thank you, sir. I think it's important to draw a distinction between the use or adding the words by notice in the Gazette, because the other definition related to the designated minerals, and it's the minerals that will be designated by the minister that will be published in the Gazette. So it's not the national development imperatives. So that's the distinction, and that's why we would not propose that we use those words in this definition.
Another question?
Yes, but in general, the reason why is because maybe we're repeating the same argument, but what is the national development imperative? Is it by understanding the chair of the committee? Is it by understanding of the minister of minerals? Is it by virtue of the understanding of the DG of the department? What does national development imperative mean? So if one then refers it to a document or to a policy or to some tangible methodology, then one understands what the development imperatives are. But you say the national development imperatives, is it the national development imperative of EFF? Or is it of the EU or the ANC or the... Who is the national development imperatives are we speaking about?
All of us.
Well, but there is a definition thereof dependent on...
That's a prerogative of the ruling party.
It is open to see any possible interpretation as it is phrased at the moment, and that's my concern. Thank you,
Minister. Let's do it. I'm closing the matter. I'm not taking any more hands. I'm closing it. Mm-hmm. You look at the probability of including it as either a definition But national development imperatives are part of the functionality of a government to ensure that certain objectives of that particular government are reached and they be standard. You could easily say that you could make a government with a national development plan. Where in an instance, you mean to tell me every time I use the national development plan, I'm going to add the Gazette, then you have to go to the Gazette. If I use the IDP, the Gazette, you know? I just wanted to get the context of the use of the National Development Plan, of the National Development Imperatives, that there will be those areas of work that don't necessarily mean they must reflect in detail, because they would, like I said, for other regulations. When those regulations start coming out, you would then get the detail of why the application of National Development Imperatives. It's like, what does who mean now? The World Health Organization has particular regulations and established put out for us to function under. So does national development imperative.
I should say, your example is exactly to what I'm referring to. It refers to...
I just want to speak on a point of order, sir.
Honorable Mahai?
I think all of us deserve the same treatment. The honorable member must raise their hand. We have showed that interest that we want to comment.
And like I said, I'm closing the meeting.
Yes, no speak.
Right?
As we wish. Raise hands before.
Noted. Agreed, Honorable Schmidt. Can we move to the... We were on page 6. Rebecca.
We're on page 6.
I think we're about to get an explanation to... 9-1, you wanted the summary of the explanation.
Yeah, it's just by way of preparation, Madam Chair. This is one of the key and controversial areas of this bill. It's changing the way that people go about applying for a mining license. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to work through this very carefully.
I think we understand that. What would you like, just want the summary explanation of section 9-1.
Okay, well, I'm not sure what way to do this yet. First of all, I'd like to put a proposal that we actually not change the we we do take up paragraph 9 and substitute it, we actually leave it as is.
Why?
The question is that why? Never thought of.
Because the system is clear and has worked for the last 20 years. Now, in fact, probably longer than that. And the explanation that was given when we had the initial discussion for this bill, why we needed a new system, quite frankly, I did not find satisfying. So, hence my proposal.
Isn't that an element to an environment?
This is the way to go about
it.
Yeah, no, this doesn't deal with just the environment, Madam Chair. It deals with how the decision is made on to get the license.
So I
should
talk to the table. What kind of table?
No, Madam Chair.
No, the application process, doesn't it start with this?
It is only marginal as one of the conditions under which you have to fulfill before. But this is really who decides to get the license.
I think when people just stick, we become something else, not a portfolio company. We are coming from a system that was a nightmare. A system that had no people accounting. A system that was so fraught with errors that people were running to the portfolio committee to come and report acts of impropriety, especially by regional managers. Now, a change of that particular fiasco is a step in the right direction. And therefore I cannot agree with an argument that for the past 20 years all was well in the mining industry. It can't be right. It can't be right. The reason why these changes are effected, it is because that system was not working. We've been to regional managers in the Northern Cape. We've been to regional managers in the Free State. We've been to regional managers' offices. Where else? Everywhere. Saying complaints of non-compliance. Can't be right that we can say this should be. Let's proceed with what is proposed. Because it is going to lead us to the right direction. Yes.
You know, Honorable Chair, I mean, I advocate for application of rational in whatever that we say. I mean, we are members of parliament and grasp the responsibility to provide guidance to not only to cabinet but also to South Africans. I have a problem with a presentation of an argument that starts by indicating the end, that finally I'm going to differ with this. I'm having a problem with that. Even if you know that you are going to differ with a particular expression, at least present your argument so that it is understood firstly. Allow to engage with others. Just to make sure that you understand that. If for the third time now, Honorable Lord expresses an impression to us that no, he is going to differ at the end. But Honorable Chair, we don't want to detect the known reality to South Africans that there has been application that have been made, especially by your previously disadvantaged, and they were overlooked. In the very same system that he's talking about. Two, there has been applications that took a very long time, not being processed. Three is that the people who have been occupying positions as regional managers would ordinarily place on top those they have known as friends and so forth in the previous dispensation. Now, we don't want to explain that. We don't take pride out of talking about the past. I don't believe in talking about the past forever. I want us to move as a country. And I think Honorable Lorimer should be able to assist us as a member of this committee. For us to move from the past and look into the future, future with optimism, and make sure that whatever we do as a country, it is in the best interest of addressing the imbalances of the past and taking this country forward. Now, Honorable Chair, in that context, I think and I believe that this the replacement of this 9-1, the original 9-1 with this new one, makes sense. Makes sense to everybody. Because, I try to listen, I sit here and listen to people presenting an argument. And I look at the proposal as it stands. There is really nothing that is being presented that says this cannot change. You know, that is why Honorable Chair asked the question, why are you saying it should not change? And clearly there is no answer for that. I move, Honorable Chair, that if in case later on Honorable Lorimer intends to vote against this, we are not voting now, and he must not continue to remind us that at the end of it all he's going to vote against it. I think this suffices and we must move to another page. At the time when he is supposed to vote, he will vote against it. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
I'm talking to the minister. With the hatching process. Because my concern is that if we are saying my certificate is changing, it means subtracted. It means we subtract or decide. It's a licensing process that we have changed.
Which is just, Madam Chair, when we come to talk about the environmental case, but this is not primarily about the environmental aspects. We don't have problems.
Licensing does include environmental.
Marginally, Madam Chair, but the main issues here. The
does
main
include environmental issues. And remember, us changing or not changing is going to have an effect on the environmental issues that are concluded and agreed upon. I'm moving to pass on.
Thank you.
Can we move on?
Chairperson, can I suggest that we be taken through what they do not want?
Okay.
Honourable
Sonia? Honourable Schmidt?
No, I'm suggesting, Chairperson.
Honourable Sonia, I'm intaking that Honourable Schmidt's hand was up before you.
Oh, no, that's fine.
And you jumped the gun in my thing, I'm closing the meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the same applies to Mr. Sonia. He's speaking without a turn, Madam Chair. But having said that,
we are all out of order in this country. Don't you know?
Madam Chair,
I'm going to give you Honourable Schmidt.
Yes,
I'm
going to
give you Honourable Sonia. But the matter is closed.
Yes, ma'am. And
continue after that.
If you look at page 7, paragraph 2, it deals with when a person identifies a piece of land. It says, any person may also identify an area of land, block of blocks, and type of mineral, etc. Request the minister to invite applications in such area of land, block, or blocks in terms of subsection 1. Application received in terms of subsection 1 must be processed in accordance. And then 4 says, any provision must not include any mineral. So I'm not sure whether I'm missing it or whether there was a section at some point in time which indicated that there was preferential treatment or preferential consideration of his bill. Maybe it is in the section which then deals with the five. Okay.
I like the way you answered
it, sir. Okay, well, there it is. Okay, all right. Now, I seem to have read it. It's gone further down. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Rose, one
sir. I just refrained from calling you to order, Honourable Member Smith.
I think let's take a break.
I think the correct process.
Let's take a break. I think the mind gets tired, you tend to forget where we are.
Before that, I think what I wanted to suggest was that let's hear what Honourable Member Lorimer does not want to hear, which is the replacement of the old order by the new order. Honourable Member Smith, you know it very well. We've been with you in all these oversight. You know it very well.
Honourable Sonia, please don't talk to Honourable Smith directly.
Let's hear what Honorable
Lorimakazuma wants. I'm closing the matter. I'm closing the matter. I'm going to continue. The only thing I'm going to accept from you is to say we must package or package. We continue.
Yeah, I support the current formulation.
Can you take a break for 15 minutes? 5 minutes? Say 5 minutes. That's our next I hope that the gentlemen don't mind us using their small room there. Remember that at home we use one bathroom and toilet, and we can't move across the passage to go. So don't be alarmed when you meet a lady inside there. Just see the advantages there. Honorable people. Yes. Yeah, I've got many doors then, you know. So there's optional rooms there. Okay. Cross 12. Still on page 9, right? Cross 12.
Take it there. Page 10. Cross 13. Honorable
Schmidt.
See, I'm still on cross 12. I'm not sure how fast my colleagues can read, but 1B subparagraph C. And environmental authorization has been included. How did you read it before that? Has been, why is that now included?
We're reading now. Yeah, under cross 12, 1, B.
B, yeah, just like B and then C. It is C then. But authorizations, large part of that has been issued. What has been
issued? By the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph C of the following paragraph. The prospecting will not result in an unacceptable pollution, that's the one. Ecological degradation or damage to the environment and environmental authorization has been issued. Am I correct?
Is it just grammar that's been changed?
Yeah. Not grammar.
Sure.
The is replaced by has been. Are you fine? Right. Then can go to page 10?
Okay, I think there's something else about it. It's a grammatical issue, but just...
I'm sorry, Theo. We don't go into the explanation, you need to accept it as true where the finish is so that you don't waste time. But you can finish off your explanation, it's fine.
Just for the benefit of the committee, the preceding words to this paragraph read that subject to subsection 4, the minister may grant a prospecting right if, then C, this prospecting right will not result in unacceptable pollution, ecological degradation or damage to the environment, and an environmental authorization has been issued, basically. So the requirement is that must be issued before granted.
Okay, cross 14, page 11.
15, page 11.
Madam Chair, clause 14.
Clause 14 on page 11.
Paragraph A, subject to section 18, the exclusive right to apply for and be granted. The and be granted is coming out, is that right? Yeah, they take out those words.
In all these cases, where you've got the bold and square brackets is what's getting taken out.
Yeah. Are we
getting taken out. So when you read it without that square bracket. Right?
My question then is, so they may have the exclusive right to apply for a renewal of the prospecting right, but it won't necessarily grant it. I just query whether that is what the rationale for that is.
Remember that when you apply for your mining rights, the conditions that are looking for, as to whether you qualify to have this mine, as to whether you have a right to mine this area, environmental issues and whatever other issues that are mine not covered, right? Now the rationale behind that is to say, don't take it for granted that you issued the right.
Can we not then say, Madam Chair, exclusive right to apply for and be granted, providing all the conditions are met? In terms of certainty, would that not be better?
No. It doesn't sound like right English.
I apologize for the English, but the intention I'm trying to get across.
Yes, read it as you would read it.
So subject to section 18, exclusive rights to apply for and be granted, comma, providing all relevant conditions are met. And then continue.
No, but the and be granted is what takes out. Remember? But it's subject to section 18, the exclusive right to apply for a renewal of the prospecting right in respect of the mineral and prospecting area in the region.
I understand that my suggestion is that we don't take it out, and instead we add this additional condition.
But remember we said you don't have to make us just get granted the right.
Don't get
granted the right. Another contract? Commissioner,
we hear the argument, but we don't agree. Thank you.
Honourable Sonsot.
I support Honourable Sonsot. This formulation is unambiguous. Not clear up formulation like this can replace this. Thanks, sir.
Clause 14 as it is.
I just wanted to congratulate Honourable Sonsot on knowing everybody's minds without talking to them. It's a great talent. Okay.
Yesterday you attended the team and asked for these documents here.
Can I?
So that it should not be undermined for raising some of these documents.
Can I be allowed
to
share the meeting? They're
not individuals here.
Can I be allowed to share the meeting? Prospecting? Can you go to page 12? Clause 17? Clause 18? Clause 18 into page 30. Clause 19 into page 14. Clause 21 on page 14.
I don't want to raise the argument again, but on page 15, sub clause 1, we're back to that argument. The minister must order to relay the mining industry to the National Development Authority. My suggestion once again is to include some form of reference to what the National Development Authority is asking. The argument is basically too broad. It can put you any subjective possible notion of what the National Development Authority are. From that of the minister to that of cabinet, to that of government, to that of political policy, to any possible interpretation.
I think we already concluded that we're going to meet into the National Development Authority in terms of being defined or used otherwise. Honourable Sanchmar?
Chair, earlier on, you asked the state law advisor to read the working definition on national development practice. I don't agree for us to narrow now national development imperative into a simple definition. That I disagree as a policy area. National development imperative is not subject to a single policy. It is referenced. There's not just only NGC in the country, as NGC, as IPA. It spells out self-industrialization. We beneficiate because we want manufacturing industry to grow. It's an imperative. Here is an issue of an orientation. For us, we see industrialization as linked to creation. It's an imperative. It's an important issue in the country. So we reject this caretaker that is used in discussing the deal. Wherever we see national imperative, we must change it and lock it in something else. Don't agree with that submission.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I agree fully with what Honourable Mahai was saying. Because if we really say, must the minister, must and so on, it's because it's a minister of the African National Congress. When the minister of DA comes in, are we still going to have to change that because it's a minister of another political party? I also want to disagree with Honourable Smith, I can extend.
Closing the
matter.
Anything else on the issue? Page 16 and 1221.
Madam Chair, can I just ask whether we flagged faults or banks as matter under clause 21?
Which matter is this?
The issue of the beneficiation, I think, deals. What is it? Clause 21 deals with the National Development Practice Recovery. So we're going to thank.
They are looking into that already. I think I said it earlier on that. Yeah, they are looking at what the issues would be, or how it would affect us, if at all, in terms of the one national development literature. Remember the bank we're going to look at when it's cross ratio? Can I move to page 17? Anything on page 17? Still on the top 22. Sorry. Honourable Murray.
Well, Honourable, I suggest that on page 17, 68, we should delete 60 days. Can you see it, Honourable Smith? The minister must within 60 days. We remove the 60 days and put in the prescribed period of receipt of an application. The reason is to be referred to the country's alignment with NEMA and National Human Rights.
Honorable
Lorimer? Madam Chair, I think that's going in exactly the wrong direction. What this bill suffers from is that too much is left up to regulation. In other words, when you see the prescribed period, it means it's going to be decided by regulation.
which means A, it's not certain up front, and B, it can change. And what we are continually told by the experts is that this legislation is chasing away investment because it does not provide certainty. So this would be another instance if we were to make the change being suggested by the Honourable Member, where certainty would be diminished.
As I put Mr. Moody in theory on the basis of alignment, if you are aligned, as they say, there's nothing substantive. Thanks.
Thank you.
Honourable, so I was saying if there is still other ideas, I'm prepared to come back with another motivation.
Doesn't prescribed period indicate what to then reflect as to what is the process in terms of the number of days? Prescribed period means it does say somewhere in terms of the regulations, and I think this is the first incident that you've been through in terms of the base, isn't it?
No, Madam Chair, I think it is, but that is the point that I'm trying to make, is that it should rather be in the law than the regulations, because that way it becomes more certain.
I was just thinking about it.
Thank you, Chief. The reference to specific time periods has been deleted throughout the bill because of the alignment with NEMA and the environmental requirements in other legislation. So that is the reason why all these processes have been streamlined and they speak to each other. So that is why we have it prescribed, because it's been prescribed in the regulations, basically to erase the time tensions with other legislation as well.
You're only able to prescribe anyway without the effort going to the regulations to check the deal. That's what says that prescribe it. I think that's the understanding of it. Right? Can we move on? I'm not going to bring this. I think so. Page. Page 18, going over to page 19.
I'm just trying to follow what the difference is between that what is indicated in your list A and that what's indicated on the bill, because I'm trying to follow the prescribed annual report detailing accurate information and data respect of mineral resources, like so on. But it follows according to the bill, the reasonable.
No, but remember, we made our own inputs, remember? And those inputs have now also been effective. That's why we originally came up with the grey and red area. So it might be the same, it might not be the same. If it's the same, it simply means we are accepting the department as it is in the file. If it has changed, it's what inputs we had put in previously. Remember that now the color code is now one, which is what the committee is going on. Based on previous deliberation. Okay, plus 27. What's on page 90, going over to page 20? Page 20, going over to page 21. Page 29. Page 22. 23. I would be really surprised if there was going to be additions or subsections or comments or something, because this part has passed, so to say. So us changing anything now would mean we are just aligning ourselves to what was concluded in the water environment. Page 23, prosperity. Another one more thing?
On page 23, line 1, 2, 3, 4, 15, we suggest that we omit the nature of mineral, of the mineral.
Say it again. On line 12, 13.
On page 23.
Page 23.
Line 15.
Yes.
Nature of the mineral.
In cases of historic residue deposits and residue stockpiles located outside the mining area and where the owner fails to apply for a mining right or mining permit within the period referred to in subsection 4, the custodianship of the minerals in such historic residues and stockpiles shall revert back to the state, and the state shall be entitled to invite applications thereon in terms of section 9. Am I reading correctly? Cross 36. 312.30 of page 23. Are you on page 23? Of A list. I think there's a confusion in our... We are looking class 29, eh? Is a new insertion, isn't it? Of section 42. Right? Cross 30 on page 23, going over to page 24.
I'm not sure, I think at some stage there was a big discussion about issuing a closure certificate and then saying, but notwithstanding that, there appears to be an environmental liability. Which may last for a specified period. I think it was. But my question basically arises, and that is following, and that is to what extent, and has there been a legal opinion sought? Because I think there was discussion of a legal opinion some said about issuing a closure certificate and then holding companies liable, apparently nearly ever more, for environmental consequences flowing from the mining operations. Now, there seems to be something which has been parked somewhere in the past which needs to be resolved fundamentally.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 24 on page 5. We've omitted the period, specified period of 20 years, and it's substituted for such period as the Minister may determine, having regard to circumstances relating to the relevant operations, which force and period must be determined in the prescribed manner. I think what was put forward before the committee at the time was
there might be latent or pseudo environmental ability, which is not determined at the time of the closure, but could have implications at a later stage. And for that reason, the minister will then determine the period and qualify by looking at the relevant operators and the portion of the period that will also determine the construction. So there will be regulations in that regard, but there must be some sort of accountability with regard to those damages that can occur at a later stage.
Another issue?
I'm just trying to get made around the fact that you issue a closure certificate, legally, and then you keep a mining company, I suppose, by virtue of those relations, binding for X amount of time, I suppose, after consultation with the mining company. But it just seems the one step after the other. It's putting the cart before the horse, and it's about the legal consequences of issuing a certificate, and then keeping mining companies responsible. Because, as I understand, depositors would help. But despite that, I suppose, in addition to that deposit, they could be held liable. If I'm wrong.
Notwithstanding the fact that sometimes they might not be able to identify the owner.
Thank you. I think maybe from a practical perspective, maybe the department maybe can assist with regard to how how the mining product will be affected once that closure certificate and the deposit that has been secured. But basically, in order to, from a regulatory perspective, who's going to be accountable at the end of the day once the mine's been closed, once the closure certificate has been issued? So I think that is the main objective that wants to be, that should be looked at when one looks at the provision that we have. And in order to address a specific time period, the minister will then have to look at the specific circumstances and then also in the prescribed manner then determine what those issues are with regard to in relation to the damage that has been put forward.
That could be clearer. Right, page 24, cross 34. Cross 35, going over to page 35. Cross 36. On page 25, cross 43. Cross 43 on page 25. Do you want to go to cross 36?
Yes.
On page 23, like 15 to homage nature of the
mineral. And substitute with mineral or petroleum. Petroleum.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear.
And then, after mineral on line 16, he said, and petroleum. And then on line 17, after reconnaissance emissions, he said, technical cooperation permit, reconnaissance permit, exploration right.
You are ahead of me.
Production right.
Thank you much. I'm on cross 36. On cross 36, it takes care of what? Page 23, line 15.
Line 15, line 16, line 70.
Section 49 of the Fiscal Act is thereby amended A by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection, subject to subsection 2 The minister may, after consulting a minister of a relevant state department, as and when the need arises by notice in the Gazette, having regard. Yeah? Please come with me.
I'm with you.
Having regard to the national interest, the strategic nature of the mineral in question, and the need to promote sustainable development of the nation's mineral resources. A. Prohibit or restrict the granting of any recognizance permission, prospecting rights, mining rights.
No, no, right there. Now we must not clear. Right.
Now what is the change?
After recognizing permission.
Yes.
You insert technical cooperation permit, recognizance permit, exploration right, production right, yes.
Can I understand this? Yeah. Agree?
Can we just understand what the consequence of that is? That is by including all the petroleum rights and permits.
Yeah, which have been excluded.
No, the reason really, Honorable, is to make sure that clarity is provided, that Section 49 applies to both mineral and petroleum resources. I think that's the major...
So the inclusion is basically include the petroleum part of it. Is that correct?
And if we have the inclusion on line 16, of course we have to get the technical cooperation permit, the funding permit, the exploration right, production right, as embedded by the Honourable Membership.
Have you captured this? Right?
I'm still on that section.
Yes.
Now, in line 22, grant immediately after the first permit, to insert technical cooperation permit, exploration right, production right, and juggle.
So basically, they're now in accommodation for the petroleum part of the industry. Are you able to read that first bit in the correct perspective?
It's basically B, restrict the granting of any reconnaissance permit, permission, reconnaissance permit, and then we include technical operation permit, reconnaissance permit, exploration right, production right. Check for the reconnaissance permit, check what's already there.
No, I was going to say,
yeah.
We remove reconnaissance permit. We only deal with technical cooperation permit, exploration right, production rights. Can you see it? Correct. On the section.
Leave here for me.
Correct. No, that's
let's good. Not shape you.
My apologies. Now, line 24.
Line 24?
After of minerals, we insert petroleum or form of petroleum.
What you're basically doing is to try and balance between minerals and petroleum because that has been the exclusion.
Yes. Line 30.
Now, can you just make sure that in terms of consistency, we go back and check, in fact, they go back and check the other areas in case we could have omitted a similar pattern somewhere. Because now you're only coming up this, in Section 49.
Oh, I don't think in other parts we have, but they can go and check. They can go and check.
Honorable Lorna, Honorable Schmidt.
Same section and share, but a slightly different issue. I'd like to suggest that line 11, that we insert the words after the minister may,
and said the words, on a recommendation of the Ministerial Advisory Council, established in Section 56A of this Act, and after inviting representations from relevant stakeholders, declare a mineral as strategic mineral for such a declaration. No, sorry, I think I might be in wrong place.
I don't have the picture where you are. Line 11. Oh, don't explain 23 now. No. Remember what the additions that Donald Trump was saying is making are based on what is not there, right? To request that it be included in terms of the way the world is, to balance the issues of petroleum, right? Now, Honorable Lorima, you are aware now. Can I go on?
So it's a slightly different issue from Honorable Mortains. I think we should...
Oh, yeah, it's a different issue.
Yeah, but it's a
different issue. Let's just conclude this and concur with it. We will also just check, just in case, that elsewhere where we are having an inconsistency in relation to the restaurant, just to be safe, let's check, right? And if there is an issue, raise it to us when you've added it without our understanding. Right, now, we concur with you?
On the same page, 23.
Same page, 23.
Line 30.
Line 30, yes?
You said after the first permit, you said to do the same thing, technical cooperation permit, exploration right, production right, and the same energy. I think I'm not on the
issue. Those are the additions for Section 49? Section 46? Or clause 36, Section 49? Yes. Thank you. Okay. Right, now we go to our pages, clause 43?
No, it is in section 49, but another addition.
Oh, also in 49?
No. So, line 11.
Line 11?
The minister may. And then my suggested insertion is on the recommendation.
The minister may, after consultation.
Take out the square bracket. After May, I'd like to see in there, on the recommendation of the Ministerial Advisory Council established under Section 56A of this Act. Yeah.
Page 23 of the bill, the addition we made that.
That's right, the addition in the line 11.
It may on...
On the recommendation of the Ministerial Advisory Council.
Right? You want the addition of the advisory council. Honorable Murat?
Chair, we are the area that deals with advisory council. Why I need an advisory council is to pick up on. So I, the amendment here, I think we prescribing what otherwise the minister going to be voting with the advisory council. I don't think that should be the legislative amendment.
I'm reading it, and remember now, we're dealing with two different departments here, Maraj. And with us dealing with two different departments, I'm wondering about the relevance of that advisory council to the other departments. And if it's still at departmental level, where decisions have to be made. I don't know, help me. I'm just thinking. Honourable Mission?
Madam Chair, it's a Ministerial Advisory Committee Council to aid the Minister of Mineral Resources. So that's the first thing. At that level it's made. So, at that kind of top level. But my issue, which I have, I can't see that any problems arise, even if there's another department involved. It basically says that the minister and she must at least consult the ministerial advisory council. That says on the recommendation of the. But the issue I would like to speak to, Madam Chair, having said that, is that what we've done now, Madam Chair, is we are creating a one size fits all by the introduction of the petroleum permits and rights into what we call the mining section. And different criteria apply, different rights and concerns and considerations apply. From land rights to land reform to land restitution to all those issues which are applicable to land affairs and the granting of mining rights and permits. We're now trying to squeeze the petroleum sector into a similar kind of consideration of what national interest and etc. So it once again forces the view that the issues relevant to petroleum industry are totally different to that of the mining industry. And to come and bring it in here is that you are squeezing this bill into something which shouldn't be squeezed into. And that's the only point I'd like to make. Thank you, Madam Chair.
One, Honourable Chair. Let's establish an understanding. The minister is the one who establishes an advisory council. Now, that instruction that Honourable Norima is suggesting subjects the minister to the authority of the advisory council. And you can't establish a structure and suddenly it becomes similar to you. That's subject to the advice by the advisory council, then the minister will do certain things. I mean the minister may decide, because the minister is the authority. The minister may decide to, on the basis of operations in the department, because the advisory council does not assume the responsibility of the department and other entities or whoever that exists. So we cannot accept the part that says the minister can only act on the basis of an advice, of an advisory council. I think Honorable Mahari is correct. But the other thing, Honorable Chair, is that we need to understand that here we are talking about the responsibility or the power of the minister to declare, right, to declare certain minerals and for petroleum as petroleum resources as strategic. Now we are saying there's loopholes, and we need to close those loopholes. And the manner in which we close those loopholes, it is the insertion, it is through the insertion of the product deals with petroleum where there are loopholes. I think we are just being fine on our share. We are just being fine, and I suggest that we proceed in the manner in which we have been doing. Or else we can request through the Honorable Chair the advice of the State Law Advisor.
Honorable Lorima, before this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question would then arise, surely, why have an advisory council at all if it is not there to advise Minister, to give her the benefits of a consultative mechanism so that she can draw in expertise and consult with the industry? So if we're going to put it in the bill, we've already accepted the principle that the minister can be better, can function better, if advised by council. So really, if it's in, this is one place where it would be a good idea to consult with the industry and the other stakeholders.
Just to clarify intention, I see why we have the intention to make the alignment with the petroleum, because when you look at section 69 relates to the application of the chapter, in the principle that it brings clarity to have those references there with regard to petroleum as indicated by the honourable member. However, with regard to the role of the ministerial advisory
committee, one has to look at the function of the committee, and one has to look at the purpose of Section 49. And Section 49 is basically to give council as minister the power to prohibit or restrict prospecting or mining rights or magazine. So, in our view, in the decision of the committee, whether to have a part for the ministerial advice committee, but we have to look at the functions of that committee then, when we get to that part. As it is now, the minister will do so after consulting the minister of the relevant state department in respect of the mineral that will be regarded as strategic in order to give it to the prohibition or restriction of those rights.
Is it possible that you can have a situation where you don't necessarily have to go to an advisory council to make a decision because it might be a determinative issue? Look at it from the mining side. And the normal processes from the mining side, there's no process where you have to go to the board or the board, decision making, whatever, past tense I put it into, for them to make decisions in terms of those processes.
Currently, there's no role for the board with regard to Section 59, and on that basis, it was not included as a role, to have the advisory council have a role on that basis, because it was not included with regard to the board. And the board is now replaced by this council.
If we go, Madam Chair, to the functions of the Ministerial Advisory Council in 56B, the first one there is the council must advise the minister on sustainable development of the nation's mineral resources. Now, surely the decision whether or not to declare something a strategic mineral goes directly to sustainable development of the nation's mineral resources. So, could that not argue that the council has a role in this instance? Madam Chair, this is to say the Minister may, on the recommendation of the Ministerial Advisory Council, and then as well. So it just inserts the Council into that process as well. So the Minister will consult the Council and then also the relevant Minister of another department. The whole idea is the consultation is as wide as possible.
Another mic. I would propose that we really don't engage in issues of after, before, or what consultation, but the spirit of the function in the relevance of the establishment of the council. And even when you look into clause that we will be discussing in 56C, it does elaborate on the mandate of the council. So the council will fit into the minister. So it's not so that we don't add something just to satisfy the process. We say confidently the function will operate under or to reinforce the minister. So I really don't see the conflict, the key issue why it should be just inserted, because it's established by the minister to undertake certain responsibilities. So it's just that I don't understand why. And the board will have to the advisory council will have to establish its roles and functions after it has been elected. It doesn't play well with me as well. Honourable Chair, it doesn't.
Madam Chair, whether the councillor is appointed by the minister or
Well, there's some small odd, it doesn't matter. But the important notion is that in an important matter like such as this, relating to the destination of mineral, I think that is where at least there is some indication that the minister needs to consult the advisory council. And the benefit of having that consultation in comparison to the extent of impact on the mining industry and possibly the economy is some form of a balance in terms of that group.
Not only, I really don't understand what the contention is. I really don't understand. There's no session. That is very important. To me, it's not necessary. One, we are saying the advisory council shall be appointed by the minister. A clear explanation is being given. That advisory council is the one that will be advising the minister. Right? Now, to want to suggest that the minister will do something after the advisory council has done something, why would you want to include that? It's not necessary. Because it's a normal course, let me say it's a normal course, that the minister having appointed the advisory council, that the advisory council shall be tasked with the responsibility to advise the minister. And it has already been indicated, Honorable Chair, that the duties of the advisory council shall be outlined or have been outlined in government, giving effect to the role that the advisory council shall play. I think it is indicated. As to why is it a must that we should include this part, I don't think it changes anything on what is being indicated here, Honorable Chair. If there is an insistence that we should include that part, you may want to pack it as well and deal with it later.
I think the return to advisory mission, you. My problem is that I don't see that every work that has to be done by the minister or approved by the minister, which is in the main departmental level, to go to the advisory council, because also the advisory council will then be in a position to sit on that issue, depending on their roles and functions. That's what I'm trying to do. Because remember you also said that the advisory council could perhaps possibly not be a permanent body. It's only when it's necessary for them to carry out a function that they will have to switch. Now, in the process of applying your work, sorry? The delegation of duties to the department, I don't know, it doesn't tell you. It's almost as if you're saying that the advisory council will then have, in that instance, powers about the board. I mean, about the minister who has appointed them. Now, can I move on that one? On page 25, cross.
I suggest that we omit such section 3 and we replace it with the following phrase, that the council must elect one of its members as deputy chairperson.
I'm a bit lost. Clause 43? Item 4. which says on page 25 after line 37, am I right? So instead of following subsection, the member of the council must elect a deputy chairman from a maximum number at the first meeting.
The problem is not their number. Yeah, result in information that the council must elect one of its members as deputy chairperson. It's better that the rest of it be saying their number.
I think that's just a redundancy of words. Right, page 26. Page 26, still under subcommittees of the council, so 43. Page 26.
The chairman, page 26, subsection 1, the council may appoint subcommittees of its members. Can you see it, sir?
Yes.
I suggest that we delete of its members. Yeah, the council may appoint a subcommittee to assist with its functions as it may be determined.
Okay,
thank you.
Honourable Lorimer?
Could Honourable Miller motion this?
The reason, Honourable Chair, is here we are dealing with a monopoly of, once you are a member of the advisory council, it shouldn't suggest that you have a monopoly of mineral and petroleum wisdom. There are other people outside the council that may be of assistance to the execution of your responsibilities. So we need to allow that flexibility, that members in the council may even consider people who are outside. The council to, while they have expertise on something, they may consider appointing such people to be part of a committee that a subcommittee that they may appoint.
Conviction?
Somebody called me. Thank you very much. Page 27. Accepted. Did you not that, yes? Page 27. Page 45. Page 27, page 45. Page 49.
How do you know?
Page 27.
I was even finishing. My apologies on that.
Yes, on page.
Yeah.
On page 26.
Yeah. Section, if we can check subsection 2A. Right? 2A to C.
Yes.
Right? It is already addressed by the amendment of section 107. So it's not necessary to repeat it.
This section 26 including the same from A to C.
Honourable Chair, on page 26, the same part after of its members. Right? After moving of its members, there is 2 and then 2A, 2B, 2C.
Yes.
It is, the amendment is addressed in Amendment section 107.
But does that now include A, B, and C?
Yes. Look, 2 it speaks about the appointment of subcommittees. Have your A, what do you call it? A list. Right? Okay. We are saying the council may appoint subcommittees to assist with its functions as it may determine. It is therefore not necessary to speak to single out a subcommittee out of many that the council may appoint. This part is already covered in one, but also the amendment of section 107 addresses this. So it's not necessary to repeat it. Otherwise it will be followed.
There comes the English word. It's already mentioned in section 107. Yep. I'm a blast now.
Basically, Chair, in 56.1, with the amendment that the Honourable Member has now presented, it's not necessary to have two in that regard. And in addition to that, in Section 107, there will also be regulations dealing with the matters dealt with, referred to in 56.2. In this matter, but basically the main motivation for 56C is that the council may appoint subcommittees to assist with its functions as they may. So it's going to be as strict as in this case. So to have it more open, to broaden the powers of the council to appoint subcommittees as it may determine. So that's the aim of it. Thank you, sir.
Agreed. Thank you very much. Let's move on. Right. Okay. Page 27. Then cross 45 on page 27. Cross 49. Also on page 27, going over to page 28.
Madam Chair, this has gone 1 o'clock. We're supposed to close and I need to go for a meeting.
Honourable,
I just want to this week that all of us as members, if can be awake to the reality that this is one thing that we really want to get done, almost done. So I want to propose that we continue share the guidance of the Lorraine.
Look, the fact remains that it's what in the house says?
Three.
The house said it's three.
It's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday today.
Yeah.
Now, we could continue until 2 o'clock. And possibly by 2 o'clock we could finish, right? And then it impacts the issue of us having to come back, because in the house I also have a question that I must address, for example. So we all need to go to the house, and I think it's the deputy president today. So we all have to be in the house.
Yes, and the minister.
So depending on how far we can get in as far as 2 o'clock, because that's why I think we are in lunch, and the minister, that's why we had a lunch. There are issues of mineral resources, I think. It would be better for us to go on until 2 o'clock, take our lunch from 2 to 3, and then possibly not necessarily have to come back, so that then they're able to go in and process the areas that is correction. And when we meet tomorrow, we are then able to determine the outstanding issues. So can I say we are going to continue as a 2 o'clock?
Madam Chair, I've got a preparatory meeting for this afternoon, which I need to go to now. I'm already late. So I'm sorry.
Unfortunately, I cannot stop you from going to your meeting. Just like I can't stop Honourable Rose, has already made a decision. We'll just have to continue. Because at the end of it, I think all would normally have meetings, but we wouldn't let it affect our processes of this meeting.
Thank you. I have the same problem. But this meeting has only been set down until 1 o'clock, and I'm not sure what the urgency is. The meeting is not to sit down for tomorrow as well, and for Friday, and for whenever.
The issue is that we would, this is not the first time we go to this. I mean, if you give me a break, and it's worth, because I wasn't informed of any meeting for anybody, so I can't accommodate this member.
But this meeting has only been scheduled for 1 o'clock. No. We don't need to inform you of meetings after a scheduled meeting, a sound meeting.
It has never been a problem before.
It hasn't, because the meeting never said after 1. Exactly the problem.
Now we had meetings after 1, remember? Please remember well. We've had such incidents. And we'd agreed to conclude the work. It's fine. We can go off now at 1. We come back after the meeting. And we complete our work. Later. Because then you have accommodations for.
What
the judgment of the hour, I can't stop.
Yeah, you can even attend before the hour. But if we ask for just an extension for about 30 minutes to proceed with our agenda, and we adjourn for 30 minutes. But
I think it seems, that our
well, already I don't want discussions, but it seems fellow members are not negotiating in good faith. They've made up their mind that something that is really happening, but I don't want really.
But I understand the principle that I can't go on the fact that people are meeting elsewhere. That we can make our own decision in the committee in terms of what we want to do.
Madam Chair, we object to this meeting after its scheduled time when it's supposed to.
We never have put it 1 o'clock. Why is it an issue to this?
Well, we have another meeting.
We had a meeting after
that.
But we
have to if we need to plug records and put this.
No, that's fine, but I haven't had meetings before that I have to go to, for which I'm not.
Yeah, I can accommodate it. Well, what are we doing? Are we continuing until 2 o'clock every hour, so 3?
Should it be the yeah. That we continue and finish at 2, and then we can wait tomorrow, because after plenary we also have other meetings.
So there must be accommodation from everybody meeting. Is that what it's saying?
Well, Madam Chair, the program is from 9:30 to 1 tomorrow, from sometime to sometime and Friday morning again. So I'm not sure what the issue is all about. We met the meeting and schedule for a certain time period.
What is the question? Just remember this, that in terms of the program we've been given permission to continue, right? But because of the fact that we all have been in the house at 2, stop the meeting now at 1 o'clock, to continue after the house. We come back to the same thing. That's my rule. Yes, we come back. I think it's after 5, isn't it? Is it after 5 to 6? Remember, we've got special permission to continue until we finish from Tuesday until Friday. Now, because I think yourself, Honorable Hululu, I think Honorable Lorima also has something, if I'm not mistaken. Myself, I have a question. So after the sitting of this afternoon, we come back here at 5 or whatever time the house is done. We come back and we continue our work at Sunday. The meeting is adjourned.
I'm having a good time.